Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and it's so good to be back in the High FM studio and back on air. I'm sitting opposite Craig and feeling secure because he's with me. Came in and I saw Makundi and I saw Elena and I saw Mike McKenna. It was just so good to be welcomed and to be back here. I have been away for many weeks, and I must admit that I have missed High FM a lot. But we were welcoming, my husband and I were welcoming a new grandson in Israel. Thank God that he's beautiful, lovely little boy. And in this time that I've been away, I have been getting a lot of comments and questions about whether I am staying on at High FM or not. Howard Feldman is heading High FM now, and he has brought in many very exciting changes. I have been asked many times if I have left High FM, and I have even been asked if I'm looking to present elsewhere. And I have an unequivocal answer, which is no. I have been here for many years, and I hope to be here for many more. In this particular position, I feel that I'm actually talking to friends. And that's why I really appreciate so many of you asking where I am and if I have left. And there has been a change in my programs on airtime. I am no longer on a Tuesday, but I'm now on a Monday, like today, from 10 till 11. So please tune in and contact us on 061-895-1019 if you would like to send any messages. I also think that it's time that I should change my quote that announces my program. It is a quote by Viktor Frankl, which is beautiful. But I think I would appreciate a new quote now. Any suggestions are really welcome. I would probably like to have from Viktor Frankl or Elie Wiesel. Those are my front runners for this. And of course, the quote must be on how we find meaning, purpose, and direction in our lives. And let's face it, we've all searched for that. My topic today is the will to thrive, because Israel not only survives, but it thrives. And this is something that my husband and I mentioned so often while we were there for all these weeks. And everyone that we spoke to said that the present wars and all the previous ones have actually been existential wars, fighting for the right to live in their country. And this is what they continue today to do. I do believe that when I say thrive, this is unbelievable. Wherever you are in Israel, there are cranes with new buildings going up. There are masses of people walking the streets and driving. And there's just a feeling of connection and togetherness and the meaning of life to actually be alive.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offers you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here. I haven't read that advert for quite a long time, and I'm always very pleased to read it from Dis-Chem. This is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. And I was saying how living in Israel, how we found how everyone is just so connected and thriving. People are thriving. It's not a materialistic country, quite honestly. They seem to live more for the day. And, you know, there's that that saying, carpe diem, live for the day. And this is what they do seem to do. You know, at night, quite a few times we would be out walking back to our the apartment that we had rented, and there would be elderly women sitting having coffee with friends, other women. There'd be men out and children. It was really amazing to see. I think we in our country have forgotten that feeling of safety at night. And many nights we walked home and we did feel fine, even though initially, I must admit, you do sort of look over your shoulder. But we're so used to living with that sense of awareness of our safety that seeing people with their bags slung across their shoulders, walking along, is quite foreign to us. But what is dangerous, I might add, and my husband had a lot to say about this, are the constant weaving in and around of youngsters on their electric scooters going to school or varsity or work. They seem to weave in and out of the pedestrians. How there aren't more accidents with this, I don't know. We didn't see any, thank goodness. However, plus there are the elderly people, probably my age or older, on electric wheelchairs, and they also seem to weave in and out of all the pedestrians. It's really very fascinating to see. The other thing that amazed me, because they were not chained down to the onto something, are they were in on the main street. We were in Renana, and if you walk down the main street, Achuza, you'll see tables and chairs and benches all the way along for people to sit on. And people do. They take a rest, they sit, and or they chat to a friend, and on they go. Now, some of these chairs are really very nice chairs. I can assure you that they would perhaps last at the most an hour on the side of the road here. Before being stolen. But they're not even chained down. It's strange, the things that amaze us, and which is just normal to them. The other thing that I found was lovely is that people put their old clothes or toys outside their apartments or their homes for anyone to look through, to take what they want. And it's such a good idea. It's a way of caring. In the apartment that we were staying, every morning there'd be a few more crocheted, like it was very cold, crocheted scarves or beanies. There was obviously a woman in the block who was a crocheter, and every morning there would be a few more scarves and beanies put out there. And by the time we would get home later in the day, those would be gone. So she was obviously making them especially so that people could enjoy them. Now, my father always said that if you travel anywhere, always listen to the cabbies. Now, the cabbies are the taxi drivers. And I remember I was going to America and then I was going to be touring Europe for a while. And my dad said to me, when you can, catch a cab and talk to the cabbies and see what they have to say. Well, I must admit, the cabbies in Israel are probably very different to the cabbies in London that my father knew, although my parents did travel a lot, so you know, they did certainly catch other taxis. But if you think of the cabs in London or even in New York, they're very fancy. Well, the ones in Israel, I had to catch them most days, are, what would I say? Let's put it this way, a bit dented. and a little bit old and not always that clean. But the cab drivers were hilarious. And just hang on, Craig is just showing me something that's just come through. Good to have you back, Sue. I wondered what had happened to you as there were so many repeated programs on air from Carol. Thanks, Carol, for that. Yes, I did. I kept sending in podcasts. I was hoping to be able to do some interviews in Israel. Unfortunately, our time was needed elsewhere, and I was unable to do the what I had planned to do with podcasts and interviews. Next time I will. But I hope you enjoyed the podcast that I did send through. Anyway, so I'm talking to you about the cabbies, as my father would tell you, the cab drivers. Well, there was a mixture of cab drivers. Some of them were Arab Israelis, others were Jewish Israelis, and each had their own story to tell. The one time, my cab driver wanted to know what I thought of Trump. Well, I realized that his name was Abdul, so he I didn't think that he wanted anything positive about Trump. And I must admit, I can't always find positive about Trump. But I didn't tell him that, but I did just say, you know what, we've all got our own opinions about him, which he didn't seem to understand. So he then proceeded to tell me what he hated most about Trump. And then when he asked me where I was from, and I said South Africa, he said a very, very good country. So I realized which side he was leaning. And then one day, it was very amusing. My daughter and the baby and I were sitting in the back of the taxi, and my husband was sitting in front next to the taxi driver. First of all, my husband was irritated because the taxi driver didn't open the boot for my husband to put the pram in. Anyway, so he was irritated anyway. This particular taxi driver was very amusing. He said, first of all, he said, where are you from? And when we said South Africa, he said, Cape Town. He was a Jewish Israeli, by the way. And we said, no, Johannesburg. And my daughter said, she was living in Israel. Anyway, when he heard Johannesburg, in shock, he said, no, you must leave Johannesburg. You must come and live here. You must leave Johannesburg. Horrible, horrible place. Not safe. Anyway, very broken English, I might say, but he was quite adamant about that. Then he said, no, you go and live in Cape Town otherwise. You come to Israel or Cape Town. So he looks at my husband, he pats my hand. Now, I don't know if any of you have driven in the rush hour or any other hour in the city, any cities in Israel, but it is bumper to bumper traffic. And they all sort of seem to be on a racetrack to beat each other and also to get round those circles, many, many circles. Well, you really do hold your breath going around them. Anyway, with one hand, he pats my husband on the shoulder and he says, you come live in Israel. Anyway, so my husband said he's not going anywhere. He's no, you must leave South Africa. So my husband said to him, yeah, in South Africa, I've got my own mountain. Well, my daughter and I started to laugh. We happened to be on a ridge, and I'll get back to that shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. You're going to be listening to an audio clip shortly, but I just wanted to finish talking about what I was saying with about this very amusing taxi driver. Anyway, eventually, we were really laughing like anything, my daughter and I, while my husband was stoically holding on for dear life as we sped along the racetrack of Hachuza. And eventually this man says to us, he's married to an Iraqi. And so my daughter said, oh, that's very interesting. She said to him in Israel, he says, yes. And he doesn't have to talk to her because all he has to say is yes. Anyway, so that was also very amusing. Now we're going to And needless to say, my husband was very, very pleased to get back to South Africa and his mountain. We're going to be listening to an audio clip, and it's by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Faith After the Holocaust. We have just had Holocaust Remembrance Day, and I put this in especially. Thank you, Craig.
People sometimes ask me, where was God at Auschwitz? I don't know. But Jewishly, it's the wrong question. The real question is, where was humanity at Auschwitz? God never said he'd stop us harming one another, but he did give us a moral code, commandments engraved in stone, which taught us how to stop ourselves. Where was humanity when old men and women were being murdered, millions being gassed, children thrown on the flames still alive? The real question, so painful we can hardly ask it, is not where was God when we called to him, but where were we when he called to us? This is what the Bible warned against in its very first chapter, when God said, "Let us make man in our own image, after our own likeness." When human life is no longer sacred, Auschwitz becomes possible. Sholem Katz was one of 50 prisoners ordered to dig their own grave and then stand in front of it to be shot. Before the guns were raised, he asked the guards permission to say Kael Mole Rachamim, the Jewish prayer for the dead. It was granted. He sang it, and the guards were so moved by the beauty of his voice that they took him out of the line and kept him alive to sing for them. When Auschwitz was liberated, he sang the prayer a second time for all those who had died. Kael Mole Rachamim, O God, full of compassion, grant rest to those who have gone from this world and shelter their souls under the wings of your presence. We must never forget the Holocaust. Never again may we walk down the road that begins with hate and ends in attempted genocide. Towards the end of his life, Moses summoned the Israelites and said, "I've set before you life and death, the blessing and the curse. Uvacharta b'chaim, therefore choose life." Jews didn't despair. The survivors built new lives. New communities grew up elsewhere. And in the state of Israel, we've come together as a people again, building one of the world's oldest and newest countries, and singing Am Yisrael Chai, the Jewish people lives. For me, faith after Auschwitz is the courage to live and bring new life into the world, never forgetting those who died, but never yielding to despair. It means fighting for a world in which we recognize that those who aren't in our image are still in God's image. It means remembering, for the sake of life and humanity and hope. And on the faces of Jewish children, I see a people who walked through the valley of the shadow of death coming to life again, cherishing life, sanctifying it, and knowing that in it is the breath of God. Remember us for life, O King who delights in life, and write us in the book of life for your sake, for you are the God of life.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. And if you'd like to send any messages in, if you've got anything that you would like to query or tell me, please do so on 061-895-1019. That audio clip was Rabbi Jonathan Sacks talking about faith after the Holocaust. And it's a particularly pertinent subject, especially as it was Holocaust Remembrance Day last week, the 27th. And also because of war still continuing. You know, I was thinking about it as I was listening to that audio clip. I don't think I've ever been to Israel when there hasn't been either a war, an assassination, an intifada, something that has happened to shock the nation. And when I say that Israel do not just survive, they thrive. What Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks said about never yielding to despair, that is what I have seen. And everyone I spoke to said the present wars and all the previous ones have been existential wars. Sorry, I just took a sip of water. Fighting for the right to live in their country. And I probably repeated that, but I think it is so true. We need to remember that. And, you know, I think it was 2006, Gilad Shalit, a young IDF soldier, was kidnapped by Hamas and held for 5.5 years. My daughter and I went, there were, a protest tent was put up opposite the Prime Minister's residence. The first Prime Minister, I think, was Omar. I can't remember. But anyway, and then after that it was Netanyahu. But the protest tent was put up by Gilad Shalit's parents and by so many people who were out to support them. People who never knew them before. There was just rows and rows of people. And the parents were sitting there every single day. And the Prime Minister would come out of his residence and see that protest tent. So much so that one of the Prime Ministers actually invited them to come in to them in the afternoon if they wanted to. But that was one of the things. The other thing is that we were there when it was Rabin's in his square lighting candles after he had been assassinated. We were there with friends. And then, of course, in March this last year, I was there with my friend as well, Charmaine, and there were posters of the hostages all over the airport, all over the streets, on every street pole. And there were also many memorials up for the Bibist little children, Ariel and Kafir, with orange teddies and ribbons and posters on lampposts. Very, very, very sad. But this time, all those posters in the airport and on the streets had been taken down, and there was the only one still up was Ran Gavili, who was injured, and yet he was actually off duty when the 7th of October occurred, and he immediately rushed up, I think it was to Nechal Oz, and he started, he saved a lot of people before he was injured and then brutally killed, taken into Gaza. And his parents never, ever gave up hope that he just might still be alive. Unfortunately, he wasn't. But his parents spoke about him so often that they kept the image of him alive. And last week, he came home. And his body was sent back for a dignified burial in the land that he had loved. And so every hostage has now returned home, the dead or alive, and which is absolutely amazing. There was a collective celebration, and when there's mourning, there's a collective mourning, which amazes me. And then Benjamin Netanyahu actually spoke at Ran Gavili's funeral. And he quoted Rabbi Doron Peres, who is a son of our country, South Africa. And his son, tragically, Captain Daniel Peres, was killed at Nachal Oz. Now, I might be wrong about Ran Gavili. He might not be. I might be muddling them up about Nachal Oz, but Captain Daniel Perez was killed on October the 7th, and his body was taken hostage into Gaza and released for burial eventually. And at Ran Gavili's funeral, Rabbi Doron Perez spoke to the family And he said, "This is a day of so much pain, but it is also a day of pride. The privilege of living in a country and being part of a people who does everything to bring even one kidnapped person home. We may be a small people, but we are certainly a large family, a huge family." And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Bibi spoke and quoted Rabbi Peres at Ran Gavili's funeral. And it's so true. We are a large family. And I think this is something that astounds so many people, non-Jewish people. They can't believe the connection that we do have for one another. How people rally around and help each other. It's amazing. In March this year, we went to Hostage Square, and again it was heartbreaking, but very meaningful to see how many people were still there. And now with Run coming home, the clock has stopped in Hostage Square for the first time, which is quite amazing. I did have it written down. It stopped at 843 days, 12 hours and 6 minutes. Hostage Square clock goes dark with Run Gavili's return. I have had a bit of flu coming back, so that's why I have to every now and again take a sip of water. But I am fine, so sorry if you can hear that. Now, I was very privileged to be able to speak to a few married IDF soldiers, women and men. And there was a sadness. There was almost, I think there was an acceptance. It's certainly resilience, but also a sadness that my husband and I both picked up in them. And I think it was knowing that even their babies are going to be fighting for Israel's survival in the future. And it was something that I hadn't picked up before. Certainly, I have always picked up huge pride in people who are in the IDF, from their families, from them as teams, combat teams, or whatever teams they might be in the army, whatever roles they might play. This time, while there is great respect for them and pride, certainly there was also the sense of a sadness, and I think that's one of the reasons why they do live so enthusiastically when they can, quite honestly, when they are able to. But no one is really expecting. You know, people talk about the war coming to an end, but the soldiers we spoke to said, "Which end? Which war?" And that was rather sad, especially as Rabbi Doron Peres said, "We may be a small people, but we are certainly a very large family, a huge family." And all of us in South Africa, in England, in Australia, people, all of us, I think, have faced anti-Semitism by our governments, by other people. I'm going to be having someone on talking to me from Australia in the next few weeks. Everyone is very shocked by the anti-Semitism that is now almost becoming normal on the streets of huge cities. And we are shocked by it. But why are we shocked? Surely we should realize that, you know, this is how it is. But on a different note, quite an amusing note, I must tell you something. First of all, there are these green parrots, beautiful, those red beaked and front, what are they called? The parrots, anyway, bright, oh, the most wonderful green. They are everywhere, absolutely everywhere. And I've always loved them. But this time I saw their nest. and in one of the parks. Well, I was completely blown away by the mess of their nests. I've lost a little bit of respect for them. They do seem to live in a community, but their nests are almost like the Hardy Dar nests. You know, those very messy Hardy Dar nests that we have in our country. There were many different, these huge big nests and holes for obviously different families, which quite amazed me. And of course, pigeons everywhere. If you want to sit on any of the benches along the way or the chairs, please take a cloth with you. And if you're as fussy as I am, you'll be wiping them down. The other thing that really I found very fascinating was the children. They were taught rules of the road from a very young age. My husband used to go walking early every morning, and he would watch the children going off to school, holding their siblings' or friends' hands, crossing the roads. So they knew when they could cross the roads, getting onto buses. Absolutely amazing. They really do understand the rules of the road. Israeli children might not understand other rules, and let's face it, each child, well, certainly each of our grandchildren, is a future politician and debates every last detail, however minor. The one day I went to go and collect my little grandson of four from his nursery school, which is a religious nursery school, and his teachers don't speak English. Anyway, I got there, I caught a taxi to go and collect him, went in to go and find him, and the teacher said to me, well, I think this is what she said to me, you must wait, waffles. So I thought, wow, waffles. She said, yes. No, she said, come. And she took me into the little nursery school. Anyway, in my head, I thought, waffles, wow, how amazing that they're making waffles for the children. Must be for lunch, because they do have lunch there. Anyway, but I go inside and I see my little grandson walking around with his big packet that his mom had put together with sweets and biscuits for his classmates. And there he was handing them all around. Anyway, and then all of a sudden, at the end of him handing those around, she handed me his little bag and his jersey and kind of said, shalom. Anyway, off I went. I phoned my daughter and I said, you know, strangest thing happened at Amitai's school. This is what happened. I said, they were handing out waffles. I'm going to get back to that.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson. We're about to listen to another audio clip, but I wanted to finish my story about the waffles first. Thanks, Craigie, for bearing with me with this. So, as I said, I thought the teacher had told me that they were giving out waffles. Anyway, and then all of a sudden, she gives me my grandson's bag and said, shalom, and off we go. I phoned my daughter. I said, you know, the strangest thing happened. The teacher said to me that they were going to be giving out waffles. I said, but, you know, they never did. So my daughter had such a laugh because, in actual fact, she said, Ma, I gave Amitai a packet of sweets and biscuits to hand out to celebrate his baby brother's birth. And she said, the biscuits are called, I think she said, Waffeln. And they're like a wafer biscuit, which apparently the children absolutely adore. Well, I was a bit disappointed because I was really expecting waffles. Anyway, we're now going to be listening to a short audio clip again by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks on combating anti-Semitism.
We have to be very clear in the 21st century of a fundamental principle. Jews cannot fight anti-Semitism alone. The victim cannot cure the crime. The hated cannot cure the hate. And this is something that is sometimes very difficult to understand. With hindsight, and I think we should judge no one with hindsight, because in the same situation, each one of us might so easily have made the same mistake. But in hindsight, the Jews of Germany in the 19th century made a momentous and tragic mistake. They said, since Jews are the objects of anti-Semitism, Jews must be the cause of anti-Semitism. And therefore, if we are the cause of anti-Semitism, we can be the cure of anti-Semitism. They hate us because we're different. Let's stop being different. Okay, we eat different foods. Let's get rid of the laws of kashrus. We observe a different holy day. Let's move Shabbos to Sunday. That's what some Jews in Germany actually did. They don't like us because we have different marriage and divorce laws. Well, let's say Dina de Malchuta, Dina, the law of the land is the law. Let's stop having our own special Jewish marriages and divorces. The whole shooting match. Everything that made Jews different from others, Jews in Germany, some Jews gave up in the 19th century. How much did that diminish anti-Semitism? Not one millimeter. Why? Because it's a fallacy. Jews don't cause anti-Semitism. Something in the mind of the anti-Semite causes anti-Semitism. And therefore, if we think that it's something we alone can do to cure anti-Semitism, we are making a great mistake. And therefore, we have to stand up loud and clear and say, we as Jews will fight for the right of Christians anywhere in the world to live their faith without fear. But we ask Christians to stand up for the right of Jews anywhere else in the world to live their faith without fear. I personally and our community have led the fight against Islamophobia, and we always will do. But we have to ask Muslims, you have to lead the fight against Judeophobia. We have to stand together to fight hate. Not Jews alone, but every single person who cares for the sanctity of life and for a free and just and tolerant society. And we must never be left alone. We must gather allies, because ultimately the hatred of Jews is hatred of difference, which is hatred of humanity. The enemies of Jews are the enemies of freedom, wherever it is. And that is why we must stand together to fight hate in all its forms.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. And you've just been listening to the audio clip by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks on combating anti-Semitism. And it's a very, a very meaningful clip about fighting Judeophobia and the sanctity of life. And that is something that we really must hold on to. I listened to a very short YouTube, although there was a much longer one. And if I would suggest anyone who wants to listen to it should listen. It's worth it. It's Alex Penstone, a 100-year-old veteran of World War II. And it's a fairly new YouTube. And he was asked if it was worth fighting for Britain. He was very eloquent, by the way. I mean, a hundred-year-old veteran. His answer was very sad. He said, "We fought for freedom. All the losses, the rows upon rows of white stones, the graves of the fallen. The sacrifice was not worth it. Our freedom is now as much at risk. Britain, our country, is insane. It is mad. It has been taken over." And one of the comments said, "It's been taken over by absolute hatred, hatred for humanity." And as Rabbi Jonathan Sacks said, hatred of difference. So this is something that none of us can sit back and actually tolerate. Even though, you know, it's they so often say that the Jews are the canary in the coal mine, that eventually whatever's happening to the Jews will happen to the others. Well, we have to fight to make sure it doesn't happen. If we have a voice, we have to use that voice. And Alex Penstone was amazing. In Israel, there's a wonderful role, well, an amazing role, should I say, for grandparents. A relative of ours, Felicia, Levy, was saying that they live quite close to schools, and when it's the end of school day, you see lots of grandfathers and some grandmothers waiting to collect the grandchildren, because both parents are working, and the grandparents are there to go and fetch the children, to take them home, do homework with them, or whatever. We were very lucky to be there on Grandparents' Day. Well, the first time we were given the wrong date. So we get to the school, which was miles away, I might add, for my older grandchild, who's 8. And we asked the security guard if we could go in. He said no. Anyway, very firm no. He didn't speak English. So I said, you know, Zayda, Safta, in, no. Anyway, I phoned my daughter. I said, you know, I don't know what's going on, but he won't allow us in, and there don't seem to be any other grandparents here. She said, well, let me just phone the school, which she did, and they had put the wrong date on the information on the Grandparents' Day. So obviously we were the only ones who had the wrong date. I'm going back to that shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and my time is going very quickly. I was talking to you about going to Grandparents' Day. So the first time we got there, well, it was the wrong date that we had been given in the notice. So off we went. We caught a taxi, a cab, back into the city. Anyway, when we did go to Grandparents' Day, it was incredibly loud and very enthusiastic. The grandparents very involved. We weren't sure what on earth to do, but there was a man there. I think he was his wife was from Yemen. I think he said he was Moroccan. I'm not sure. He was Sephardi Jew. And he helped us completely. In broken English, he told us exactly what to do, how to do it. He was marvelous. And then we all went into this very large hall where if any of you have been to King David or any other school, when children are about to go and sit in their chairs and there's a howl of a noise, nothing could compare with the noise coming from the grandparents and their grandchildren. It was quite fascinating. I also looked down at the seats and I thought, oh no, I mean, all I could see was mess from pigeons. So I am a bit OCD-ish, so I took a cloth and I started, well, my scarf actually, started wiping it down. When the woman who was, I was wiping it down for my husband as well, when the woman who was sitting next to me told me in Hebrew to sit down and leave it alone. Leave it, Lola. Anyway, I thought, I wonder why. And apparently nobody bothers to clean the chairs. But when we stood up and walked out, you could see the chairs that were really dirty because they all had kind of two marks on their back from that. It was wonderful. It was such a privilege to be able to be there for our granddaughter, and she was so excited to have us. How wonderful it really was. But what we saw there was that connection, that the future generations will thrive as well, without doubt. And you know, in South Africa, we have that word Ubuntu, and which is, I am what I am because of who we are. And in Israel, that's exactly what it is. Your child is my child, and we will help you bring up your child. It was beautiful to see. I'm going to be ending shortly, but I wanted to tell you about a visit, a very unusual visit to the Kotel. Our nephew Paul had planned on taking us to the Kotel for the day. It so happened that the day that we had chosen, which was a Sunday, which was the only free time that he had, it was pouring with rain. absolutely pouring with rain. So when we got there, it's very slippery, as many of you know if you've been there. When we got there, the square was empty, and my nephew said, go into that side little shul there for the woman, it's undercover. I went in there, but it just did not feel like the kotel. So with my umbrella, I went up to the wall, and I had, for the first time ever, I had like a meter on either side of me that I could just hold the stones of the wall. It was amazing. So I held my umbrella and I put my head next to the wall, and the rain was pouring down, mixing with my tears, because I thought of the tears through the years of millions and millions of people who had gone there to pray for peace, for healing. And I let myself cry as well, as I had my head next, right on the wall. And I put notes into the cracks in the wall. It was actually an amazing feeling. It felt as though Israel was crying with me, which was beautiful. And for me, coming back to South Africa, I love South Africa. And I do pray that that things will start changing in our country, that we will find peace. And today is Tu Beshvat, which is the new year of the trees. And it's a time that we do, it's according to biblical law, there's a seven-year agricultural cycle concluding with the sabbatical year, and which has a special name. And Tu Beshvat is to actually be celebrated. Our rabbis established that a fruit which blossomed before the Shvat is produced would have been from the previous year. It's quite a difficult thing to understand, but to me what I loved was just simply the fact that it is a celebration of trees. I'd like to end now. It's been lovely being back with you. Well, I've got a wonderful song, so please stay and listen to that. And I will be back next week, same time, Monday, 10 to 11. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Vusi. Thank you, Makundi. And God bless to you all.